Hello, my name's Diane Botticelli, and I have here Dr. Connie Stomper. We're really happy to have her here tonight. She is going to be talking to us about lots of aspects of consensus training, but let me tell you a little bit about her. She has a doctorate degree from Columbia University in New York, and she also has degrees of master's and doctorate from Peace Theological Seminary in Spiritual Science. She has spent over 25 years co-creating consensus trainings at the Community Foundation, Community Planet Foundation, founded by Jack Reed. And this is really her love. And we're excited to have her talk about all aspects of consensus at this time. And she also does individual counselings and workshops, and we'll tell you more about her website. So, Connie, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's always a nice thing to be talking about, especially in the world these days, I think.
Yes, and we are excited to hear, what is consensus? Can you start that way?
I think that's a good place to start, because I think there's a lot of ways the word is used, and I think one of the ways I've sort of noticed recently, it gets a little bit of a bad rap, because people associate it more with the idea of a consensus reality, which is like the common belief system that a culture holds or the world holds, and it can be very difficult or even dangerous to counter that narrative.
Say more about that.
So, well, what I'm thinking about, without necessarily pushing buttons about what's going on these days, but if we just look historically, that there were times when the world was thought to be flat.
Ah.
Okay? And then there were other times where we decided that the world, Earth, you know, all the solar system revolves around the Earth, we're the center of the universe, you know, we're that kind of egocentrism.
Oh, yeah.
And scientists like Galileo came, you know, with his research, said, no, actually, the sun is the center of the solar system. You know, well, it wasn't the solar system at that point, but it was, you know, because that was the idea that the sun actually is in the middle. And that was such a contrary to the narrative or the consensus reality of the time that mm-hmm. he was actually imprisoned for it.
Oh, my.
So if you think about those kinds of examples, of course people don't want an authoritarian idea, a static idea of what it is that can't be challenged. In fact, that dissuades the whole idea of science, which is a dialogue between,
right.
you know, like things get questioned and it builds and slowly it keeps building more and more information. If it's in a stuck place, like a consensus reality where no other opinions or viewpoints are allowed. Now, consensus decision-making that we're working with, I worked for about a decade in organizations before I even started with doing work with Community Planet, it is a very co-creative process that in fact wants as many points of view, as much diversity. And I like to think of a very simple example of if the adage of an elephant, if you see the tusk and I see the tail and somebody else sees the sides, are we talking about the same thing? Well, if we got enough perspectives, we start realizing, yeah, it's the same thing. We build a model of what that really is.
Can you say more about the value of decision making?
Well,
consensus?
Yeah, I think the value is multiple. I'm going to actually, there's a favorite quote that I read this and it was it just really resonated with how I've experienced consensus. And this is actually from one of my favorite MDs on the planet who actually helped me heal a lot of my lifelong health issues. But he says that when we connect deeply in shared purpose, we create hyperintelligence. Hyperintelligence allows us to know more than any single individual can know. Connecting together allows us to experience more than any single individual can experience. The fact that you're reading this or now suggests that you're curious and have an intrinsic desire for more knowledge. So it's part of this, the curiosity of that. It also suggests that you can experience more of being part of a community rather than isolated in your human experience. So that, again, that community building of people's involvement in it.
Right.
And the idea, we've experienced that people make much better decisions because the more perspectives you have, the more we actually do exercises where we start at the beginning, like in the training, and then have people learn some skills of consensus training, and we'll get more into the training later. And then we do similar exercise And they tend to be these ones that many organizations use. They're called survival exercises, and right. so there are sort of the best answers. But I don't think I've ever seen maybe one group that doesn't do much, much better after they actually learn what consensus is. Or at the and organizations, we often call it just problem solving and decision making, but the idea is that they would come into an agreement. And I'm going to go more
into... This sounds like more than just coming into agreement.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I use the word agreement because that's what people generally think about it. We want to come into agreement. But if you think about it, though, there's a lot of ways people come into agreement that are not necessarily going to be better decision-making. Let me give you an example. A gang decides that they want to attack that lady on the street and grab her purse, or a company decides that it's fine to put the pollutants out into a neighborhood no matter how damaging it might be to the community. Or a country might decide that it's fine to steal resources from somebody else that doesn't have as much of a military presence, right? What we talk about, and this is actually very similar to the Quakers. We didn't base our work on the Quakers, but it's interesting that we came to a very similar place. So I like to distinguish coming into agreement from coming into alignment.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're developing a language for something that you're doing that's really needed right now, since we have no dearth of problems in our world.
Yeah. Well, and alignment is like with what, though? Okay, so with the Quakers, it's with God's will. And ours is a little more generic. We talk about the highest good of all concerned, not like some people say the greatest good in terms of no individualism and nobody else counts and we tell everybody what the greater good is. No, it's individually deciding that, yes, as part of humanity, as part of a community, as part of a family, as part of a friendship, as part of a couple, the other person's good matters. You know, the higher we go to a perspective, we could call it maturity, we could call it spirituality, but it's going to give us a different reference point for how we make decisions. So then it's not just the personalities agreeing, but it's actually coming together to into something. And, you know, I just experience almost energetically that the group keeps, you know, coming more and more into that process. And they don't. It's not that people have a religious focus. I mean, we've done this with all kinds of groups and corporate. They're, you know, we never mention anything different like that. But people have a sense of when they're coming from, like, a higher moral stance or a moral, you know, like maturity or something where it's not an egocentric view. It's not one that's just about me, me, me.
I think you're talking about you as a facilitator and how you're holding an idea of where the group can come to.
I think there's an intention, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit about what works in consensus, because I think intention and the more people have a belief that there is a way that everybody can win.
Could you say that one more time?
Yeah, I think that the belief that there can be a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Now, as a psychologist, I have seen and observed personalities where unless somebody's losing, their ego structure feels like they're not winning. A win-win is a kind of equality. And some people have need to be dominant or need to be feel like, you know, I'm on top. Mm-hmm. And that kind of attitude doesn't work very well because, in fact, it's very hard to respect the needs of other people or the respect of other components of the decision making. And we'll look at that in a little bit.
That sounds like an idea that's hard to break or a habit that's hard to break, is it?
I think it's a habit that's hard to break. I think if some people have that value, they're not going to do well with the consensus process. Mm-hmm. They probably wouldn't choose to be part of it in the first place. And I know when we talk with the community about, Jack created a whole vision with a group of a large-scale intentional community. And one thing that really became part of that is people, in a sense, need a kind of consciousness. And I think for me, and we can talk more about what that consciousness is, but certainly starting with the belief and the value that, yes, it matters if everybody else's needs are taken care of. That eventually there's never going to be, like, it's not sustainable, it's much less regenerative to have somebody be dominant and other people hurting from that. It's not a stable system, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not one where, and it comes from, I would say, kind of a lack consciousness, mm-hmm. a sense that there isn't enough in the world, and, you know, or, and maybe childhood experiences or something that would influence that, you know, I've got to get mine, or, you know, as opposed to let's all help everybody get everything that they need.
Even if it's not obvious to someone, there might be some of those subtle beliefs that come up, I'm imagining.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that, you know, it can be very unconscious. And part of what we do in the, like in the first part of the training, is that it's about consciousness, collaboration, cooperation. So we have individual exercises that help people start to discern things like how they may be attached to position, you know, as opposed to how they can be more neutral about the issue. And often that is not about what they're talking about in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes from something in the past, or it comes from, again, beliefs or experiences where they don't have that trust. Or, you know, and they have to hang on to something, or there's such a need to, if I don't control something, it's not gonna work.
Does that get in the way of the decision-making process and consensus?
Well, it does get in the way if we're talking about trying to find the best decision for everybody, then just having an attachment to the my point of view isn't going to allow for what I would say would be the openness. So let's just look at some of the components of this. And just to say one other thing about that is, like, we all have our preferences, right? It's not about, you know, it's not that we don't. You know, a preference is not the same as an attachment to my position. So a preference means that I want to put that forward because I think it's a good idea. And I might end up not having my preference, but still having a solution that I can see the logic of, the wisdom of, the value of, the benefit to others for, you know, because my preference may not be that way, you know. Like, if, you know, if there's a pie and I want 5 pieces of 6 pieces, you know, that may be my preference, but it's not going to work for everybody.
Right, right.
I mean, there might be a situation where, you know, everybody else is on a diet, but in general, you know, taking more than my share is not going to be the way to do it. The other thing I find gets in the way is, like, people think of consensus as compromise. If I'm not going to get my preference, then I'm compromising myself. And I think it's a very subtle difference, because a preference is something I think is a good idea, but I can see the value of other things. A compromise, the way I see it in this context, is actually when I might violate, you know, the solution, or I might violate a value of mine, you know, or something that I know to be true, that there might be research or information that people can get to understand better and inform the situation better. And so sometimes with consensus, it's not just about giving in and making sure that, okay, I want to make nice with everybody.
Right.
Because I may have a perspective that's essential for the group. And that's the one thing I've seen in, like, those exercises, when somebody, like, they'll say later, well, I knew that, you know, it's like, well, you needed to say that. Well, I sort of said, you know, it's like, well, no, the group needs that information. Even if it may not be ending up being used, but it may be valuable to actually build towards the decision.
Is this a demonstration of hyperintelligence that you talked about in your quote?
Well, I think the hyperintelligence is that there's a synergy that's beyond just the additive value of all the people's knowledge or information.
Okay. Oh, that? Can you say more about that?
Well, the synergy, I mean, I don't know how to say that more than the observation of it, but it's in these simple exercises, it's like almost never does somebody, because what happens is people do their individual answers, and then the group discusses and comes to their answers. And I'm almost never have seen where somebody's individual answers are more accurate or better decision than the group comes up with.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
If the one or two things like that didn't happen, you know, if it happens sometimes, that means the group doesn't have the skills to use all the resources they have there. Either they weren't listening to somebody that had experience, or the person didn't tell them where the experience was coming from, or they were, you know, withholding, or they were shy, or somebody was dominating the conversation, they didn't listen to this other point of view. You know, but almost, and that's one of the reasons in the training we lead with those exercises, because people start to see that, oh yeah, actually together we can create something, we can find a solution that's much better than I could have done by myself. And that's very impactful for people, because most people don't assume that.
But they learn it through the process.
They can learn it through the process, yeah. And they learn that once they have some skills. I mean, we worked long-term with managers in this context where I did a lot of these trainings, and they had a philosophy that was very consistent with this, in that they were trying to shift the organization to something they call participatory management. Mm-hmm. So that people that were actually working with customers, or this happened to be a home building company, people that were building the houses, people that were customer service, had a perspective by that being, you know, the tire meets the road, that the high people in the administration may not have, the bosses. So they were trying to be able to utilize those resources. Right. Not that there's not value in the overview or the vision that, you know, but there's also value in what I learn every day from interacting with a customer. And we wanted to capture that. So and I forgot what your question was anyway.
You answered it. Yeah. You answered it, that this, the hyperintelligence works with, as far as I understand it, that people evolve their understanding that, that the whole working together has more intelligence than their individual answer, and that has an impact in itself. And then you started to talk about how that you can inform from top down, but you can also inform from the bottom up.
You can inform from, I mean, in an organization, there's those layers. But that actually gets into some of the components of what some of the things that are involved in consensus. And the one that you're really looking, we're looking at there, is something called, the egalitarianism. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's like I have to respect and value the input of the people in the group that are coming. You know, it doesn't mean that somebody might not have more expertise in one area, or some, you know, that you can't say, but if there's no positional authority, there's not like, okay, I'm the boss, I'm the leader, so therefore my ideas are going to be more valuable for the group.
Do you impose or suggest guidelines of how to talk to each other so that people, it supports the listening?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot about, I mean, the one thing I was just going to say is that if I was working in a organization, if there was a manager in the group, I would coach them on just, you know, doing it differently, that they're used to making the decisions. They may want to couch how they say things and be aware of the over influence they would have on a group.
Right.
And you know, the other thing is that we talk about, this is sort of getting back into the training, but something called ownership language that came out of nonviolent communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's very interesting that when we say something like, you know, the earth is flat or the earth is round, as opposed to, well, my experience in looking at the globe taken from outer space was, you know, it looked round to me. And then that kind of invites people into a point of view, not defines reality.
Correct. I see.
And it's kind of interesting because, you know, being a corporate consultant, there are books and theories out there that you have to learn to talk in a certain way that is authoritarian, and like, you know what you're talking about. And this is very different because this values the idea. That's a different philosophy.
Right.
That the, you know, the leader.
Get that.
And actually, it's very interesting when you talk about leadership that way, because I'm thinking of, I don't know if you ever saw the film I Am, but when they absorb, Tom Shadyac did this great movie, and there was some researchers he points to in there where they, psychologists observed animals and how they would make a decision to go to a watering hole.
Yes, I do remember this.
And they expected that, you know, the big leader, the male, dominant male, was going to make a decision and he would start going and everybody would follow. But instead, what they found was the animals would be sensing. And at one point, they would, you know, some of them would start turning in a certain direction. And when at least 50% did, then the rest of the herd would. And sometimes the leader was looking around saying, you know, where'd they all go or where are they going, kind of thing. It was not at all what we think is our nature from our animal nature, even from our animal nature, much less our human nature. So that to me was very enlightening support for mm-hmm. what we've seen in organizations. I think the other aspect of that I'm remembering is that when there was a predator at the watering hole, it was a more important decision. The herd waited till there was 2/3. Which are very interesting percentages, because it's like a vote or a majority vote that we actually use in our model. And that doesn't go as far as consensus goes, because consensus means that everybody is in alignment with something. Procedurally, people can say they stand aside. They don't necessarily support things exactly the way it is, but they're willing to put their energy into it and support it.
So bottom line, what stands in the way of a consensus decision?
Well, let me go so through some of the components so that we know and reference like where that can either work well or where it could not work well. The first idea is what we've been talking about is that people come together, they collaborate. It's not one or two decision makers making it for the whole. As much as possible, people are coming together and to meet the needs of the group as much as possible. And that's important because one of the things that's really different about a co-creative process like this, that if people have concerns, they're encouraged to surface those with the process, but not as a blocking of the idea. Like, no, that's not going to work. It's more like, you know, I'm concerned this is going to go over budget, you know, or I'm concerned that we're going to spend so much time we don't have if we have to get it by this deadline. Or let's say, even in a one-to-one relationship, like, you know, like a friendship, like, well, if we go to the beach, I'm not sure we're going to get our project done, you know, and as opposed to, well, what if we worked twice as hard today so we have some time to enjoy outdoors and feel better and find ways to incorporate the concern into the solution.
That seems very important.
Not an either or kind of thing.
That seems very
And in fact, a lot of the process of that is sometimes going to, you're going to a deeper need also. It's not only, let's just say in a household or roommates or a couple or something, you know, maybe I have a hard time that you're watching sports all the time. It drives me crazy. It's like, well, is that really it? Or is that that I really want more quality time with you? Mm-hmm. And if we did carve that out and I carved out my individual time, it might be fine that you're watching the sports that way, you know, or maybe you're playing music that's just too loud and I don't like it. Well, is there something else we can do with that? Or can I get earphones or, you know, something like that, as opposed to you just can't listen to that music when I'm around? Or let me know so I can make a point of going out somewhere. You know, there's ways of dealing with, there's a great book called Coming to Yes, where they talk about a very simple example of an orange. You know, we might be fighting over the orange, that the dominant one should get it, right? Or the one that says, I've got the best, you know, reason to use it. Well, if we don't talk about the fact, hey, you needed it for the rind to make a cake and I wanted the juice, you know, there's not even an issue there. But oftentimes we're so solution oriented that, you know, we're trying to come to the solution before we even discuss the needs and the possibilities. I'll give you another example. As I had a friend.
Well, hold on just a moment, because that really seems very important.
Yeah.
That you're answering. When you say that there's a conflict of intent or need,
right.
Then what I'm hearing you say is that sometimes it's very effective to incorporate that person's need and the overall concern that I have, and you wrap it up together so that both people, it is a win-win.
It is a win-win. I mean, that's what we're going for, that everybody, you know, there's a way to, you know, that it's important to get to the equality. It's important to both people or all people, that everybody's needs get answered, at least to a reasonable extent. You know, again, if we go back to the ego structure that has to have their own way all the time and they're not happy if they don't, that doesn't work in a kind of community.
So is it fair to say that in these consensus trainings that people are learning the pathway to a win-win point of view or solution or a set of solutions, that they really evolve to learning how to do that?
Well, we have definitely seen that. I mean, that's, you know, and it's actually, we get great testimonials like that, that there is a process people can learn. But again, I would suggest that they're starting with a sense of a consciousness that values that kind of learning of harmony in the sense of, you know, the greater good and finding solutions that come from a place that will take into consideration everybody's needs.
Over your 25 years, do you see people coming together in easier ways, or is it the same? Is there an evolution or a pattern that you've seen?
Oh, you mean just over the years?
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily the years, although it would be interesting. What I have noticed is in organizations like the one we worked in, where the administration was trying to put in this concept of participatory management, there was a value and a vision that supported this kind of interaction.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you didn't have that, it would be very, very different. Another group where it worked very easily is people that, we have a sister community to Community Planet called One Community. And they were bringing in new members and wanted to keep training people in consensus because they really have the same vision as Jack's book, The Next Evolution. And so people already had a mindset. Didn't mean they had the skills. It didn't mean that, you know, because going back to the equalitarian thing, well, let's just go through some of the other components. It's like collaboration, but then cooperation. It's a little bit different. And the way I see that is different, I'll give you another good example from my point of view, was that I had a friend, I said, we do these consensus training. He says, well, you have to train people in persuasion skills, don't you? And it's like, that's a lot of the mindset. I have my position, and I have to see how I can make everybody come into agreement with that. So how do I persuade people? As opposed to me, a consciousness of consensus would be an openness to what is possible, what other ways can I look at that? How can we merge those other ways? How can we put them together? You know, if a consensus is working really well, people's concerns will be integrated in a way that makes for a better and better solution. Because yes, maybe we should be considering the budget, you know, and maybe we need to do something a little bit differently that would get us the same place. An example, and one more thing I want to say about that. Another thing that doesn't work that people often do is, which is sort of built into what the example I gave you, is that they start with the issue as a solution. In the corporate world, they worked with a lot of subcontractors who often late to the project. So it was the subs were wrong. We have to get them to come into agreement with coming on time. They weren't looking at what they did that contributed to that. Mm-hmm. And they weren't looking at, you know, we had to, that was not a frame to do consensus. How do we get them to come into agreement with us? What we encouraged them to do and ended up doing is saying, how do we bring the subs together with our superintendents and the people in the field and ask the question, how do we make the project as efficient and effective as we can? That was open-ended. That allowed for their perspective. That allowed for, and in fact, they even asked for more. They said, the way to make it, we want to see the plans ahead of time, and we want to come together as the group and be able to talk about how we're going to work together in a specific way. It may be, if you put the beam there instead of there, I can wire it differently. You know, I don't know the specifics, but it was that type of thing. Whereas the schedule had been created so that no sub was next to it with any other sub. Keep them away so they won't fight. Right? And they're like, keep us together so we can come up with cooperative decisions. And in fact, what happened was two things. One was that they shortened the schedule because now with the cooperative thing, people could be working together and in fact, helping each other work it in a way that worked better. And then they also came up with like the framer, his perspective, after 40 years, you know, I know the architect did it this way, but if I can suggest these changes, you're going to get spend less money, it's going to get done quicker, and you're going to get the same result. Again, a perspective that, again, it's not that, well, you're only a subcontractor, you don't know. It's like, no, he had that expertise from years of working in that. And when that got integrated in the solution, again, in a corporation, that was money. Shortening the schedule, that was money. So the administration got very convinced that this is really, you know, I had managers in the beginning that say, oh my God, another meeting, you know, it's like, because if you don't know how to work together, it can be a waste of time.
Right.
You know, have you ever been to a meeting? It's like,
yes.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't go anywhere. And by the end, people were excited about the synergy that they knew would take place. Like what other ideas are going to come forward that I haven't thought of, you know, what else is going to inform our decision? So that was a very impactful way of convincing everybody. But at one point, for instance, the market changed and some other managers came in and they didn't have the same philosophy. And even in the trainings, it was much harder to see people buy into it because the context was different. The whole value and the message was different. And that's where it comes to what's the consciousness. It's like, okay, now, you know, we're coming from a very different point of view. How do we get ahead? How do we, you know, just save money? Because another thing that they had worked with was an idea of partnering with people at subcontractors. In other words, they weren't just taking the highest bid every time. They had a couple of companies they would work with long term. So now they may be paying a little bit more, but they were not getting to pay for it later in customer service because they had an ongoing relationship with the people. and therefore they could look and say, hey, what worked, what didn't work, what we can do, we do better next time.
So when new people come into the group, there's a big adjustment, it sounds like.
Well, there can be. In this case, it was more the culture of the organization started changing. And people would contribute to that and other, you know. And that's another whole discussion, but, you know, a lot of times with cultures, people that aren't in alignment with it will almost self-select themselves out at a certain point, you know, because they're not comfortable with not just doing it their way and, you know, this, you know, I want to go work, I'm the boss, and, you know, people do what I say, and I don't want to waste time, you know, listening to other people's thoughts and things like that. So it was a good context to work in, because in businesses, you know, there's always an awareness of bottom line, and when they see the cooperative processes can actually lead to that, and the synergy of ideas can lead to better solution, it's very exciting, and people get excited about it. So the other thing I wanted to mention was inclusion is a very important part of that, so that anybody, like this, just the example I gave, the people that were employees in the company could have come together and tried to make, say, what, how would we make the project better? But in now including the actual representatives of the subcontractors they were working with makes a big difference. Like now they're not, you're not just trying to make the decision for everybody else. You're including anybody. And sometimes there's two things I want to say about that. One time, sometimes the inclusion might be something like not a physical person, but like the effect on the environment. The environment is a stakeholder. It might be children in a situation around schools. If they're older kids, you might get them involved, but you might just want to include that perspective. How is this going to impact? Mm-hmm. It might be a community where your business is running, but how is the community going to react to certain things, or what needs to be built into the solution that they're coming on board with it? And things like that. So that inclusion is sometimes I think the inclusion is also research or checking out information. It's not just coming together and sharing opinions about things. You can get in a lot of trouble that way. You know, sometimes it's like, okay, that's a good idea. Let's just check that out and see.
So you're telling me that the consensus process with decision making sometimes can be an ongoing, it's a series of meetings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, with the ones in the organizations, it was a project management for, you know, for quite a while. The training itself was 2 days, and the community planet training is actually longer than that, because we work with this directly with this consciousness part. I mentioned, like, the idea of the attachment, detachment. There's also we work with things like filters people have. We call it truth versus stuff. You know, we may think that we're seeing clearly, but we're actually seeing the issue from past experiences, from a mindset, from, you know, you look like my sister that used to bully me, you know, and I'm not even conscious of it.
How do you work with that?
Well, that's a fun process. Let me give you a good example of how that showed up, though. One time we were just trying to get the group together and start, and Jack went, shh, you know, yeah, we're coming together. And this one guy got very upset with me that I was shushing him. And it turned out I hadn't even done it, but he was the one that had a sister like that, that was always controlling him, you know? So what we look at, it's actually kind of a fun process where we'll usually use this one when there's a group and there's an issue going on with people, and we'll have them try to see it from somebody else's point of view.
I can see.
You know, or if they're just, sometimes it overlaps with the attachment issue, and we'll have, that's a fun exercise, because people will get really into the attachment of their issue. We have them sit in one chair, it's like a gestalt process, and they just really get into all the reasons they have to be like that. One example was a guy who was very verbal, he was very much of a leader, he liked his leadership, he loved his idea, you know, and it's kind of like, but I know better, and why shouldn't I be saying things all the time? And then he shifted the other chair, and eventually he got to the point where actually a leader in this context, which is part of our philosophy, is one that can facilitate bringing all of the resources of the group into the decision. It's a very different role than being, you know, it's like that herd rather than, you know, the alpha male. And then all of a sudden, and he had a breakthrough in a sense. He said, you know, that's kind of like what my Tai Chi teacher or something said, you know, that there's a way of, like, or a good teacher will actually empower his students to be even a better teacher.
It sounds Quaker-like, too.
Does it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me how that fits.
Well, Quaker, it's the ability, the definition of leadership is the ability to be led by a kind of higher power or a higher wisdom.
Right.
So it is a more receptive process.
Yeah, and the way we work with that too is to encourage the group to take that everybody is a leader in the group. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just... We tend to practice different exercises with people assigned with certain key roles like timekeeping or you know, facilitating the interaction with people. But if a facilitator, you know, is only listening to two or three people, you know, I might say as just one of the other guys, hey, I haven't heard from Diane. What are you thinking about this?
Right.
You know, or I might say, wait, we haven't checked for consensus and we're going off in a lot of different directions. You know, where are we with this first thing we started talking about? It's the same thing with the other component, which is participation. We have ways of checking in with people. Like if something's just not working or it's only a few people are dominating, we'll go around and say, okay, we'll either say, what's your participation level, do you think, you know,
mm-hmm.
so people can own and look at that. Because part of the leadership is also taking your part in the group. As much as I might be inviting you, you also need to be taking responsibility for putting your energy into that. And when people don't, sometimes it's what we deem as what we're calling a safety issue. So we'll look around, we'll go around the room and say, what's your level of safety at this point? And if there's somebody really low on the scale, it's like, let's talk about that. What's that about? Well, every time I start talking, you know, Bill seems to interrupt me, you know, or I've tried to chime in, but there's so much going on and I don't want to have to fight for airspace kind of thing. Whatever it is. But the idea is it brings the awareness of the whole group up of where
right.
we are, and it helps people own their own space.
So you're always building skills in consensus.
Yeah, we do the first part of the training with some of these preliminary things, and then we do stop and teach as people are working on real issues.
Mm. Wow.
Because most people, you know, or something that the whole group can look at, you know, even if they're not part of an ongoing group where they'd have an issue together. They may just say, hey, you know, what would be great things we can take away as things to do about, you know, recycling or the global warming or what's going on in our community or something like that. You know, you can make up an issue. But the idea is that people are going to find a real solution by the end of the training to something that they've decided is something we're working with.
There's nothing more convincing than to actually coming to a solution in a group.
Well... Well, you had experience with the training, like similar to what we do,
I did.
It's like if you get to something, it makes and you see that the process can work that way, you know,
and it stays with you for years.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. You know, I mentioned the thing about airtime, and I had an awareness. I don't know if this was in the training that you did, because this is something I added from knowing the Myers-Briggs instrument that does personality types. People, without going into detail of that, many people know the idea of extroversion or introversion,
mm-hmm.
At least the common sense of it. And one aspect of extroversion is people think by talking. And introverts usually have to think about something, get their ideas formulated before they're going to say it out loud or risk saying something. Now, in a group with half and half, guess who gets most of the airtime?
Right.
And guess the introverts are saying they're doing one. Well, extroverts would say, well, we're participating. Why aren't they? You know, why? I mean, it's like they don't even put their energy out kind of thing because they don't understand that people mm-hmm. have a different process mm-hmm. inwardly. And the introverts are going to do one or two things saying, you know, they're taking all the airtime. They don't even know what they're talking about. And sometimes they don't because they're just talking out loud.
Right.
You know, they're not. And the other thing that introverts or the other part of the group would think, well, they must know because they're going on and on about this. And they attribute too much authority to the person just because they're being very verbal or they're talking in that kind of enthusiasm, you know, that can be kind of convincing.
All those resources of people that don't speak or either put themselves down or assume that they're not going to be listened to, all those resources are lost unless you come in with a consensus platform. Then you can capture all those resources.
Then you can capture them. Exactly. And that's why if people like don't do better on the second exercise, it's because the dynamic. We then look at what was the dynamic that we missed, what was there that the group didn't use.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's a way of saying, okay, you did not use all the resources here because you had somebody that knew something more about this and you either didn't, you know, listen, they didn't say it, whatever the dynamic was. And that's an experiential learning factor. You know, it's not a right or wrong. It's just like, how can we observe that? This part with the introvert, extrovert, I think helps people understand. And the other piece of that is that there are certain meeting skills that we teach, process of consensus, but also there some meeting skills are things like timekeeping and, you know, an agenda and whatever. Some are more what we call process skills, something like checking in with people or coming to consensus, or, you know, are we at a consensus yet about this? Let's take a break. One thing that might be also, we stop sometimes and people just need to breathe. You know, if people, either it's not going anywhere or, you know, there's tension, we can breathe, we can call in a higher power. We've had very diverse groups. Nobody said they had to have a spiritual perspective, but people will, you know, we've had people that were Native American calling in a certain way. You know, there'd be other people that would pray, you know, but many people, especially that are interested in this kind of relating, you know, have a sense of going to that higher level.
So I'm just going to talk to the audience here for a moment. So as you're hearing all of this, there might be questions that go through your mind, like, I could really use something like this in my organization or in my family or in my relationship. And so we invite you to check it out. And
CommunityPlanet.org has information. MySoulMusings.org has information. And you can also, I think we've got a website page, Community Planet, that you can also ask questions.
Do you? Oh, that's great.
We'll post this video, and then we're going to solicit people's questions.
Are there blogs on your website that deal with some of these issues?
I've been dealing with, you know, a lot of, I've been writing blogs for Community Planet. They're also on my website as well, anything that I write. And I'm actually trying to put together a book that will have some of these essays on different pieces. You know, not a book like a linear book, but just examples of some of the keys.
Why do I think we just scratched the surface here?
Because we just scratched the surface.
There's a lot more that you have to share with us, and I just encourage the audience to take advantage of what is available and what's more to come.
I wanted to just say, when people say, what is the value like of the consensus training? Can I mention just two other points that I think are important? One of the other things that doesn't work, people don't always understand this, but it's people can come into agreement too quickly. And it's called groupthink. It's called groupthink. And that could either be because people are not participating fully or they're deferring to an authority that they perceive in the group. I've seen that. Or they just are conflict resistant. They feel if they're going to have opposing point of view.
I have a question about that. Is that, could that be gender related? Could it be cultural related? Could it be age?
Yes. I mean, you know, it depends on. It could be somebody in the organization. It'd be somebody that they know that they think is, you know, important. We did one training with an organization where one of the leaders of the organization was there, and people did not want to disagree with him. And he didn't necessarily want other people to disagree with him either.
I see.
You know, and so one of the techniques that I think is very valuable, and I thought of this because I have a blog on it, is called the devil's advocate. And what the devil's advocate is a way of saying a different perspective without feeling like the group is going to perceive you as opposing the majority, or, you know, risking being the one that's, and I might say, well, just as a devil's advocate, have we thought about this? Or how is the community going to receive this? Or, I just see this a whole different way. Can I share that? Because we need to consider this. And that, again, if it's, it gives people permission to do that in a way by saying, I mean, you can actually say those words, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
You
give them permission to do that.
So that's a real safety. You've created enough safety for people to do that.
Right. It helps, especially if people, I mean, and again, if you're using ownership language, you can still oppose people and say, well, I have a different perspective.
Right.
And things like that. But if people are very conflict avoidant, which people are, or they do have issues about seeing other people as authority, or I'm not, you know, or being quiet and, you know, maybe I'm there with my husband and I'm used to deferring to his opinion, you know, or there's a dynamic there and stuff like that. or I just learned that in childhood or something like that, then this gives people a graceful way. And there are other techniques that facilitate the kind of communication.
Yeah, but that opens up a whole other level.
Well, it does, you know, and I think the essence of this, you know, I wanted to just share one of the testimonials. Well, there's two other that had to do with another piece, which is something called I would call inner consensus. And just because you're in a group trying to come to outer consensus doesn't mean that you're in a place that you actually don't have conflict within yourself.
Connie, I think that particular subject do give us a teaser on that, but I think that particular subject is a whole.
It could be a whole other training, actually.
Well, more like a whole other presentation.
Oh, okay.
Where you can talk about that and link it with this information as part two.
And I'll just give you the teaser because
yes,
I think it's
please.
Important in a group. And the one testimony I wanted to read is just such an example of it. And he says, I used to have an internal battle with myself about what I should say, what I shouldn't say, how I should say it, if it's worth saying, the consequences of saying it, etc. I see this as myself trying to go through a consensus process with myself. And people will do this in a group, you know, trying to, when you come in and earlier. And he said, now I can ask just one question and the answer becomes much clearer, much faster. And that is this for the highest good of all concerned?
Wow.
So again, it's that alignment, you know, even when within oneself, I think that's an interesting. And again, from a psychological point of view, what I've noticed is if people don't own, you know, even aren't aware of the different parts of themselves that are not in consensus. One with their own decision making, like he was describing, is difficult. But it can also be easy to project the other part out. So now you've got a conflict with somebody in the group because you're not able to see
right.
that other point because you don't want to see it in yourself.
This Couples. Is a great tease, because there's like, probably a lot more to be said about this.
Yes.
I'm serious. I invite you to
okay.
come back and do
we'll
part
talk.
Two on this.
Okay. So we'll do that. And, you know, to me, I'll tell you the bottom line for me about why I love consensus.
I'd love to hear that.
I think that it's more than just a process and more than just a decision making. I think it's a way of being in the world that considers and respects others and diversity, and that holds a consciousness of abundance that does believe that we all can work together. Like in Jack's book, he talks about not every man for himself, but a world where everybody that works for everyone.
And he could say every woman. For
and
himself.
Every woman. And where
what a beautiful way to
and it's a way
bring this to
of relationship building, community building, and I think of expressing loving. And here's an example. We'll just end with this. This is one of the testimonials that to me was the core of why I do the work. If you would like to be trained to open up to the greater experience of complete giving and receiving and loving harmony, this is the perfect vehicle for that purpose. I felt such a beautiful expansion in my own spirit gifts and loving intuition with the members and facilitators of the Consensus Course. I learned to build a community environment by being ever mindful of the safety of the whole group, and I learned that when you focus on the safety and inclusiveness of all members, the job at hand becomes a much easier task. Make sure that you really do want to expand your consciousness before showing up for the consensus journey. It'll push you forward.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
And that, it was like, yes, that's what it's about for me. And that's what it's about in my own consciousness in doing this work, is to keep doing that expansion too. Nobody's at a place of living this all the time, and I always understand that there's that edge for me to do.
But we need to thank you for focusing on this, because the world needs this work.
We need
and
to
I
be
hope
listening.
You continue on.
Thank you very
and
much.
And come back.
Appreciate
and do
the opportunity.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.